No.
It's enough. Even torturing you is boring.
This is the small council.
All righty, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Small Council Radio. Super excited about this episode. With me, I have Brett and Craig. Thank you guys so much for coming on and being my co-hosts.
Of course.
Oh, no worries.
And then I did not say who our special guest was, but I'm hoping with the title you have a 50-50 chance of guessing who it is. Carlo, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a long time coming. I think last time we had you on was like over 2 years ago when we had Fabio for the first time.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on, guys. Clearly, I didn't offend enough people last time, so we'll see if we can rectify that today and get a lifetime ban this time. So, looking forward to it.
Awesome. So, we're going to talk about a bunch of different topics for this episode, but first thing on the docket, we wanted to kind of go over our last episode. A lot of things were brought up, and I'm glad to have Carlo on for this one to kind of, you know, address some of the things and whatnot. But with that said, it's just coincidence that Carlo is coming on because we are already kind of in the works to have him on as a guest. But yeah, so I guess we can jump right into it. Carlo, I'll let you kind of take the floor and, you know, because you probably have a better memory of the episode of me, because I was, instead of re-listening to the episode, all last night I was listening to Turning Ground.
Okay, great. Well, I mean, I assume everybody listening, but probably not, knows that I created A Song of Ice and Fire Stats. I am the one who built that website. So I did want to touch on a few things that you guys spoke about in your last episode where you were discussing breaking the meta as a mentality and like breaking away from just like net listing as like an idea and kind of beating it. And people might be quite surprised if they don't know a lot about stats and its background to find that actually that's like a really, really important topic to me. One of the things that I did want to like kind of like get across to people and discuss with people is that You guys discussed how you find that stats or believe that the stats site and the things shown on there are quite synonymous with the meta and the established meta that people kind of like adhere to and think exists. But actually, it was built and is built on a pure mentality that it wants to rank things so that it can penalize people for playing high rated stuff. So at its pure, like base level concept, it's actually there to try and break the established meta. It's there to reward anybody who doesn't netlist. It's there to reward you for playing the less powerful stuff. But unfortunately, people's lack of understanding of that and their lack of understanding of the way the site works, and also maybe them not actually submitting, is what can lead to this actually becoming this net listing problem, which is if you just look at the site, see what's most powerful, then play it and don't submit your results, then you break this ability for the site to penalize you for just using the same lists that everybody else does. So I think that I really just wanted to like talk about and portray that part of the site, because obviously I'm really pleased that it is successful enough that everybody kind of like believes that what's shown there is kind of representative of what's most powerful in the game. That means that the site has been very successful at being adopted by people. But I do think that it's been not very successful in me kind of explaining to people like a deeper understanding of what the site like actually achieves and why things are ranked.
Well, I think what does a good job though on the site is the ranking system with, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but like if you're, you know, playing someone with a higher ranking and you beat them, you'll get more points than had you beat someone with a lower ranking. And I think that might factor a lot into rewarding people for using, you know, things that aren't as good.
Absolutely, so I mean, that is the basis of the system, which is when you play against things and people who are higher rated than yourself, you get a much bigger reward for the win. That is, of course, assuming you submit your result. Unfortunately, I can't reward people for playing things when they don't submit. And that trickles down through to everything, to playing the less highly rated factions, playing the less highly rated commanders. These are all things that the site rewards you for doing. And in the inverse, it penalizes you for playing Mance Raider, for example. Free Folk are the currently highest ranked faction, Mance being the significant outlier in that as the highest rated commander. It's a big penalty because you have this big positive rating added to you. So now you're considered, you definitely should win this game, and therefore it doesn't give you very many rating points for doing it. So that is the way the site tries to kind of break out of what the established meta is, that if you think you can do well with something that's badly rated, that's what it's trying to get you to do. That's trying what it's trying to promote the player base to do, actually.
Brett, what's your thoughts on all of this? I know you weren't able to make it for the last episode.
I think just to add a little bit to it, besides just in your everyday matches, if you play, you know, what I would call like a pickup game, besides trying to kind of challenge yourself to play something that's a little bit softer, I'm not going to call it comp because this is more of a living document than what comp is. Swedish comp was something that existed in like Warhammer, and it was a pretty hard set thing. The ELO system is actually better than Swedish comp because the ELO system is a living document, right? So it will adjust and it will change as things adjust and change. As people's list building evolves, so does the ELO system, which I give you a ton of credit for, Carlo, because it's a really cool system, and it is adaptive. So outside of just, you know, typical challenging yourself, hey, that says that Robb Stark is the lowest rated commander in the game. I don't think Robb Stark is the lowest commander in the game, so I'm going to go play Robb Stark in a pickup game, and I'll be rewarded with high ELO points, you know, in particular if I beat a stronger person. But that transitions into ELO tournaments, which are actually very, very fun. They're very fun when the game is even balanced. Right, because it challenges you to, something is always going to be the weakest, something's always going to be the best. The ELO tournaments challenge you to take what is perceived to be the weakest, what's rated as the weakest, and make a run with that in a tournament setting and try to win as many games as you can while picking up some bonus points for playing the weakest stuff. Currently, ELO, to me, feels like the way that I want to play going forward. We'll have plenty of time to harp on Free Folk and Mance, but at this juncture, I'm kind of over beating my head on the wall trying to figure out what beats Mance. So I would prefer to just be able to play in an event where I feel confident that Mance isn't going to be there, and then I can run some of the other stuff that he is oppressing and holding back, and then, you know, I try to do my best with some of the weaker stuff, but... ELO tournaments are super fun. If you haven't given them a try, you should definitely do it. You'll find that the players who lean into even fringe powerful stuff, right? Like things like Tyrion Lannister, for example, you're just the likelihood, even if you win out in that tournament, of winning with even a fringe powerful commander is slim to none. So they're really fun events.
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, stats job of giving a, you know, it's not only is it absolutely the best tool out there. I mean, every other instance of, you know, data, you know, at this point is mostly all anecdotal, you know, anything, you know, that you might say, oh, well, this must be good is more so probably something that you're just experiencing within your own, you know, play group. I think stats is the best way to give us the big picture of what's going on with the game.
Yeah, I obviously think that stats has a lot to offer, but I am very accepting of its failings, but in my mind at least, most of its failings are my personal inability to be able to like communicate to people the way it works and what it's trying to achieve and how magically everything will be better if you just started submitting your results is unfortunately often the answer. It's like, if you just trusted the ranking system, if you just trusted and cared about what your player ranking was, then everything would be a lot better, because you would feel like there's a reason to run less powerful stuff. You'd think there's a reason not to just run the best commander, even within your own faction. Never mind, you know, like not necessarily just running the best commander in the game. Stats is built like right from its ethos, because I am, you know, I am a very competitive player. If anything, like, you know, like I'm an overly competitive player. I want to win a lot. And I was trying to build and create reasons and promote reasons for players to want to play things other than the most powerful thing in the game. So I built systems and I built the algorithm so that it should promote the best players to not just want to curb stomp people with the best stuff in the game. And it's no accident, it's no surprise that the number one rated player in the world right now, Mikael, he doesn't play the most powerful factions. If anything, he plays the weakest factions in the game, and he is rated very, very highly for doing so. If he can just do well, he doesn't have to win tournaments with it, though he does win plenty of tournaments. He, for example, came to the LGT last week, and he played Greyjoys into the Invitational, which was a side event on the first day on the Friday, 16 incredibly you know, previously successful players, very high-rated players, lots of tournament winners. I think they had something crazy like a combined 40 tournament win between the 16 players who were there in attendance. And Mikael did not a win, but he went 3 wins and 1 loss in the 4 games with his Greyjoys, what are considered one of the weaker factions in the game, definitely not in discussion as the most powerful. And then in the main GT, he took Lannisters, and again, he didn't win the event. He didn't go 7-0, but the system rewards him for trying to take on a much harder challenge. He actually earns more points for going 6-1, for example, in the main event of the LGT with a low-rated commander than the person who goes 7-0 with Mance, because it's considered a more impressive feat to do well with a low-powered faction than it is to win the event with a high-powered one. So that's what it's trying to achieve, and unfortunately, it just doesn't quite get across to the player base as much as it should, because we still see so many players gravitating towards the things that are at the top of that list, and we see people using it as the net listing device that you were talking about last week, which is unfortunate. You know, that's not the kind of thing that I wanted to help spread across the world. You know, I want the site to be as open and transparent with information as possible, share lists, share what's winning, share as much data as I can collect. I want to share that with people so they can learn from it. But unfortunately, what I didn't want people to do, and I don't want people to do, is then use that to say, well, this is how I'll curb stomp everybody. That I'm the best player in my group. I always look at the site. I know what's the best. And then I'll take that back to my local group and I'll just win all my games. That'll make me feel good. So, if that's what people are doing and that's what their perception of the site is, then that's just really unfortunate. And I'm sorry if that's what I made.
You monster.
Exactly. What have I created?
But no, I think that's on the individual player. I mean, you can't really create what you've created and not have that be, you know, a potential outcome. So it's really, you know, and that's kind of, I think, at the core what our last episode was about, is on an individual level breaking free from this mindset that you have to run what, you know, is considered the best at that moment. Because obviously stats is ever evolving, you know, the just meta stats, all the data is ever evolving. So I think sometimes people just are so stuck in the here and now that they, you know, they don't have the foresight sometimes to really see what, you know, what certain things potential are.
I do agree with the things that Brett touched on before, though, you know, without getting into a whole discussion about the current state of the meta and stuff like that, you know, I do think that it's very difficult for a player with a competitive mindset to, even if they don't want to play what's currently the big bad, right? And the big bad right now is universally kind of accepted to be a Mance Raider list that has loads of stuff, like just loads of stuff, whatever you want to call it, units, activations, you know, it's got everything it wants right now. It normally brings all sorts of interesting tools along with it. You know, it can have chariots, could even have Magna Mighty in it and still have more units on the board than you do, all these things. That list bears heavy on any competitive player's mind. Even if you don't want to play that list, it can feel really complicated to try and think of lists that you want to play, which then you think, oh, but if I meet Mance, I'll just lose. And that's a really hard mindset for a person who likes to win to come to the table in any situation. And before we've even taken the first round of the game, to think, I really don't have a very good chance of winning this game. I've probably already lost. I know that my opponent's quite good and they have a list that I just don't think I can beat. And when we're in that mindset, when we're in that situation in the meta, I think that's when we're in a problem. That's when things are difficult. And that's when people really need to consider whether or not that's what they want to bring to the table. And like you say, it becomes an individual's choice whether or not that's what they field. But I know as a competitive player, I think you need to give people a reason to not want to bring it, because they have a reason to want to bring it, which is they probably want to win that tournament. They want to win games. People enjoy to win games. But we need to try and create, as a community, as a whole, reasons for them to not want to do that, for them not to want to win games in that way. And that's really, really complicated because, you know, people like to win.
Well, and I think one thing you guys bring up on Tourney Ground fairly often, which I agree with, is, you know, once you get to this, you know, certain level in your own skill, that we should be really testing our own skill as a player, trying new things and trying to still maintain, you know, your win rate, so to speak. You know, if you're dominating your local, you know, there's no reason that you need to be running the best of, you know, whatever's out there, because you're not really testing yourself anymore at that point.
That's for sure. If you come away from a game and you haven't learned anything, then I guess for me, it's a missed opportunity, isn't it? Whether you win or lose, if you're learning and improving and becoming a better player, surely that's the ultimate goal at any given time. And if you're just fielding the same list you always field, you're not learning anything about it, you were pretty sure that you were going to win before the game started, and then you did win, and you didn't even learn anything new about your own list or your opponent's list, then from a competitive mindset, from a competitive point of view, you've just wasted the last hour and a half of your time because you needn't have even bothered playing.
Yeah. Now, I do have two questions before we move on, plus whatever you might want to bring up as well. I was wondering, so, you know, I constantly hear you talk about, like, the stats on your show. Is that something, I'm sure some of it is, but is all of the stuff that you talk about something that everyone can see, or is that, like, special data that you're able to access?
I mean, it's pretty much, to try and promote people to get involved and not just netlist, not just come and look and then never become part of, like, shall we say, the engaged community in the site. There is a lot of data which you're not allowed to look at unless you've submitted, wait for it, one whole game. If you submit one game, that can be a casual game, that can be part of being a tournament, then you gain access to 90%+ of all the information. Now, there is a lot more there that I could access and that I can do things with, but basically what I talk about and what I look at is I look at the site, you know, in a lot of ways, I built the site for myself and I still find it very useful. I look at the stats of various units and I'm not looking for like pure fact in terms of like, oh, this is the highest rated thing, so therefore it is the best, I will use it. I'm looking to have it kind of challenge my perceptions about things. Make me take a second thought about something. Maybe if I thought something was really bad when I looked at it and then I suddenly find that its rating's really good, I might think, oh, maybe I should look at that unit again. What am I not understanding about this unit that other people are doing very well with it? Or the complete inverse, I think this thing does really, really well. I'm convinced that this is a great NCU or a great commander. And then I go and look at its stats and I find that it doesn't do that well. Like, generally speaking, either option could be true. And then it makes me think, actually, maybe that thing is letting me down. And I try and readdress kind of like my thoughts on the unit. So I just use the site in the same way that everybody else does in the vast majority of cases. There are some numbers that I have access to that other people don't. But pretty much it tries to be as transparent as possible. It tries to share all the information that it's collected with everybody. There are some things that I actually had to switch off over time because there is actually just like there is too much data to be able to like give it in its entirety in its live state to people. People who've used the site for a long time will have noticed that there used to be a lot more interactive filtering graphs. You used to be able to like say, oh, I only want to look at this versus this in this situation, which is funny, actually. It touches on a point that Cyrus, or even a joke, shall we say, that Cyrus was making last week about kind of the way American sportscasters generally use stats, which is they kind of like, they give these really obscure, specific, like, you know, I think his joke was about a baseball player who, you know, has a .5 average when batting left-handed on a Wednesday or something like that. And that's not really the way that, like, global collection of statistics should be used. That is actually, like, that's a stat. That's not statistical analysis. That's a very different approach to the way that data is supposed to be used. But I did find it a really interesting, revealing comment because I think it's quite prevalent pervasive in the way that U.S. players kind of understand statistics. They see it as just obscure data facts because that's what they're fed a lot of the time in American sports, whereas it's not the way that I consider statistics. I consider it much more from like a business perspective, a work perspective. Statistics are a thing that I work with all the time. And they're actually, you know, there are things to make really important, like monetary based decisions on after collecting enough information. And the site has, you know, it has 43,000 submissions. It has 43,000 games on there. That's what it's analyzing and creating these rankings from. But unfortunately for some people, you know, like Brian made the comment last week off the cuff, as people kind of are to do. He said the system won't be predictive until it has 1 million data points. And unfortunately, that's kind of like a mindset that we've been battling since day one. When I first started the site, everybody told me, you know, I was like, I've got 100 results and look, this is what the early things are showing. And everybody said, oh, no, it's worthless until you have 1,000 results. And then I had 1,000 results and I said, here's 1,000 results. And they said, it's worthless. Get 10,000 results. I got 10,000 results and now I need 1,000,000. There will always need more data. You will always need more for the people who don't really understand data analytics. Unfortunately, there's always a bigger number, which will be better. And it is true that the more results that we get, the stronger the analysis becomes. But what we have is definitely enough information to put some really interesting insights into the game and make some really interesting learning points from. So that's how I try to use that. I try to learn from the information that's been received. But you have to be careful about, you know, you don't just blindly look at it and say, well, the site says it, therefore it's fact. The site says something and that makes you challenge your own perceptions is the way I use it and the way I think about it.
Yep, I think that's a great point. Is, you know, you see something on stats, and you know, you take it for what it's worth. You know, you take it and develop it, use it to your advantage. But you know, you shouldn't let it dictate your creativeness or your, you know, just, I don't know. You should be guiding the stats.
Creativeness is a brilliant word for it. I think if you just threw together all the top-rated stuff on the site, you would not have the best list in the game by a long stretch. But creative use of some of the best pieces in the game, plus your own understanding added into that, your own creative thought process that says, oh, I know a thing that combos well with that. I know an NCU that perfectly pairs up with this unit. The NCU might not be that high rated because generally it's not brilliant, but in this specific case, I know really why I'm using it. And that's how we unlock whole new ideas, whole new ways to think about the game, and can really surprise your opponents, because also if they're definitely locked into this idea that they're going to see the same lists every week and the same opponents, the same units, then you bringing something which they've never really given proper consideration to can really catch somebody off guard.
Agreed. Last question I had about it. This one's a lot more simple. So I think I heard you reference it in your episode. What would the ratio be, give or take, for TTS and in-person submissions?
That's information that I don't have to hand. it's definitely a gut feel. It's a long time since I ever tried to separate the information out. Tried to another kind of pure ethos of the way I built the site. And I actually got a lot of kind of pushback against this for a long time. People said that I really shouldn't do this. And even to this day, you know, you guys touched on it a little bit. You didn't say it was wrong or right, but you touched on this idea about whether or not the site should consider all games, whether or not tournament games are more important than non-tournament games. And for a very long time, there was also a large divide, shall we say, in the community about whether or not TTS games and on the table games were the same thing, whether or not it's played in the same way and whether or not it should be perceived. A long, long, long time ago, because of a lot of pushback that I got from people, I created actually a separate ranking system, which one of them ranked you on TTS and one of them ranked you on the table. But this was something that I regretted almost instantly. It just became a big headache. And at that time, I was tracking the difference. But this was, of course, right during the middle of COVID lockdowns, when the site was still in its infancy 2 years ago or so. And a lot of the big events were being run on TTS at the time and not very many in-person games. My gut feel is, and these have, you know, some, I have historically looked at this information. I can't tell you for sure right now. But roughly speaking, about 50% of all the data comes from tournaments, and about 50% of it doesn't. 50% of it is casual games played between people. Now, a lot of the casual games are through TTS, because not a lot of people log their casual games unless it's on TTS. And some of the tournaments are still on TTS, but they're actually a very, very small minority. So I would say that my personal gut feel is that we're about 60 to 66% of the data being on table data and only about a third of it being TTS. You can see that also. I think what you're talking about is, I was kind of mentioning that Martells are played a huge amount on TTS at the moment. Everybody, because that is people's only availability of them, and they want to learn them, they're new, they're exciting, and you can just spawn them in pretty much as easily as you can spawn in any other faction. Now, they are predominantly the most played faction on TTS, but their overall submission over the past few months has been as low as, I think, 5% of all the data. So that shows you that even though they're the most common, most popular TTS faction, they're still only a very, very small, one in 20 submissions include a Martell. So it shows you that most data is still tabletop based. And I would definitely, you know, I built the site and it became very popular during the TTS era. The biggest, you know, the last time I came on, we were discussing the NRG tournament that had been run. It was the first kind of like big internationally kind of entered TTS event. And that really helped kick off the TTS scene and really helped get people interested in the site. It helped showcase what the site can do. But its growth and its popularity through TTS is just a side product of me trying to make a tool which is useful on the table. That's actually where my... You know, I'm very much a tabletop player. I play TTS sporadically, but only to kind of like introduce myself to new players and new styles and get extra practice in, particularly in the run up to big events when I'm really hoping to, you know, do as well as possible.
Brett, what are your thoughts?
Give me just a second, because I'm actually at work looking into some things really quick. Just give me a second.
You're good. Craig, how about you? You've been hiding out.
Man, you mean I was supposed to be listening?
Yep.
I've got a question for you, Craig.
oh, no.
Here we go. Uh-oh. I mean, for those who don't know, I met Craig at Gen Con for the first time, and we had a great time hanging out, or at least I think we did.
Yeah, I think so too.
But Craig's an avid non-TTS player, and also, you know, not a huge submitter to the site, right, as far as I'm aware. Are you surprised that kind of, like, the way I talk about the site, is it very different to how you thought about the site, or did you see the site as this kind of like bastion of the meta, or do you see it as being kind of like creative and trying to break the meta?
Well, it depends on what time period we're talking. When it first came out, I saw it that way. I saw it as just a collection of information. I saw it basically how you described that you intended it to be. And then as time evolved and TTS became a bigger thing and the different metas started to clash, you know, the U.S. and Europe and all of that, I started to see it as the other way, as, you know, all people are just snatching the best thing so that they can figure out what's the most powerful to run. You know, I saw it more perverted than what it was originally, but I never saw it as, well, the intent of it is to figure out the meta so everyone can run the most powerful stuff. I still saw it as a collection of information.
Mm.
As you probably remember, we didn't always see eye to eye on things. One of the
No.
things I saw happening, and it wasn't so much to do with you or how you made the site or even the website itself, but more to do with human nature, is that people were using it that way. And then in addition to so I started playing TTS last winter in order to practice. And because I had some discussions on Discord, you know, and everyone's like, well, your ELO is low. You don't know anything. Like, oh, okay. Well, I'll just play some TTS games and we'll fix that real quick. And I was playing a new guy on there. He was new to the game. And he's like, this site is amazing. You know, he was a 40K player, or I think he was 40K. He's like, man, I wish my games had sites like this, you know, games I normally play. But then he was venting about it, and he was saying, well, the problem, though, is the community sucks. And I'm thinking, this is the best community, like, for gaming that I've ever encountered. So I dug deeper into it, and basically he was saying that every game he found to play, because he was a brand-new player, didn't really understand the game, how things went together. What was happening was, is when he'd ask for games, he'd find games, but everyone was so worried about their ELO, you know, and this guy's brand new, 1,500 ELO versus players 1,700, 1,800. You can't lose to the 1,500 ELO player.
Yeah.
You lose a significant amount of ELO. So what would happen is, instead of teaching him the game and helping him with stuff, people were just curb stomping him.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he was getting really, really frustrated. He's like, I don't even want to play the game. Like, this is cool, but I would rather play a game where people help me learn the game than just worry about their rankings and curb stomp me. And that was kind of like a negative side effect that I started seeing with the website. It's not so much I don't know how you avoid it. I know it's not intentional.
Oh yeah, I think I think it is. It's an interesting point. I think there are two things which the community do, and I've never been fond of or particularly endorsed. Right, like I don't think that it's never been a thing that the site's wanted to propagate, but it does.
Right.
Like I will accept that. Like it's kind of creation of what the site does. Number one is that thing that you said that like. At the point at which two people choose to submit their game, which I personally say and think that people should just submit all their games, a lot of people's mindset switches. Like they do switch from, as I said for a long time, like, you know, earlier in this episode, the site is not about players just curb stomping people. It should be promoting players trying to challenge themselves and learn from games. But once people have like accepted that they're going to make this submission, I do agree that it does mean that some people completely switch off from the learning style. And I do think that maybe if people are willing to go and teach games, then, you know, like they are games that like, if you're invested in your opponent having a really positive first experience, then I do accept that like you probably shouldn't be submitting these games. If you're ever going to help your opponent during the game, then this isn't a test of your two-player skills at this point. You are sort of playing both players at the same time. And if you're being judged against the 1,500 player, but they're not really a 1,500 player because you're helping them, then really we should just be avoiding that submission at that point. And hopefully that would take a lot of pressure off. But like, of course, a lot of people, they care a lot about their rankings, and I do say that people should be invested in their ranking, but again, it's a very transitory value. It will change very quickly. Recent form is the most important thing for what your ELO is. It's not you're never like held back by one win. You'll quickly regain those points if you truly are a better player. So yeah, I do think that's a problem. The other thing which you didn't mention is, but I did think it got mentioned a little bit last week is something that I've never really been pleased about is I think something that you also kind of came on the wrong side of, Craig, is when somebody comes with an idea of a list. Now it's a bad gray area when a person says, oh, how can I make this better? Now, if a person is looking for genuine advice and somebody gives some information about, like, by the way, that's not really very good, that's not a very high-rated unit, you might want to think about changing it. There is maybe a positive way that we can do that, but a lot of the time what we see is a person coming and saying, like, oh, what about this unit? And someone's just like, yeah, Mountain's men are shit, don't use them. You know, like, and then they prove it. And by providing information from the site. Now, yes, that is information from the site that is pretty factual. it is a number of submissions across hundreds and thousands of games that say they're not as good as other units. But realistically, you want to be providing learning information about why they're not doing very well, not just telling people the stats say they're bad, so your list is bad. Like that's an unfortunate side effect too, which is basically, again, that propagation of net listing that, like, if it's not in a net list, don't bother.
Right. And something else that comes from that is if someone does present an idea that does work, for example, I had won a tournament with, it was 2 NCUs at a time when 3 NCUs reigned supreme. And I would not deny that 3 NCUs are better. And I'm just using myself as an example here, but I was like, hey, I was able to make 2 NCUs work this way because of this. But instead of, oh, well, you know, maybe not, whatever, it was instantly, well, your opponents are bad then if you won with 2 NCUs or something like that, whatever it was at the time. And that's all part of human nature and all a side effect of having this great information that you've provided, but human nature doesn't want us to challenge our beliefs.
That's true. I mean, I've definitely been, I've definitely once upon a time called you and your opponents bad, Craig. So, you know, I'll not blame that entirely on the rest of the community and act like some kind of saint. But no, I do think it's also very interesting. One of the things that I really like about statistics, right, and I'm not even talking about the site now, is that if you can be as cold-minded enough and as clear and thought enough as to look at the statistics without emotion involved, then it can help us reevaluate ourselves and question ourselves, because human nature has a very, and human emotion means that we ascribe a lot of skill to everything that we do well, and we ascribe a lot of luck and randomness to the things of other people doing well. So when we see somebody else do well, we often just think they're not skilled, they've just got lucky there, whereas that other person thinks, oh, I took on a big risk and it worked, played off for me, aren't I really clever, aren't I really skilled at this game. So
right.
Two people can look at this exact same play, the exact same outcome, the exact same rolling of the dice, and one person consider it skill, and the other person who came off on the wrong end of it considers it luck. So yep. It can be very, very difficult for people to break that idea that other people out there might actually be really good at this game. And that's what I would like the rankings to do. I would like them to, the player rankings specifically, I would like people to be able to look at these and not just say, oh, that person got lucky, they won some tournament, there's nobody good involved. I'd like people to be able to say, this person has got a great high rating. Now, you shouldn't naysay people who don't have a great high rating, but you have to give respect to those who have these 2,000 plus ratings. These players have put in, have won consistently over hundreds and hundreds of games, like literally submitted hundreds of games, and they've got consistently good results against consistently good other players, because the algorithm and the ranking system really doesn't reward you for beating low-rated players very much at all. So they're playing against other really good players and consistently doing well. So that is the positive side of it, but it definitely has that negative side that you described, which is people will dismiss results of those who they perceive to be lower rated and perceive that as a lower achievement.
Yep, I agree. And not just players, but units or stats or lists as well. I've seen lists, and this is a bigger thing, I think, and I think we're going to talk about it later, U.S. versus European meta. The U.S. is more about skew lists, and we'll get into all that later. But sometimes a list is good, is only okay on paper, but the way the player runs it makes it good, you know, and stuff like that. But when you look at just the raw numbers and take the player out of the equation, that gets missed or dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
Which you can't really quantify that with numbers. So, I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but...
No, there's no substitute for skill and experience in this game. Like, the most powerful thing in the game given to even an okay player who's never used it, doesn't understand the list, doesn't understand the benefits and the intricacies of the way, like, certain units are supposed to work together, doesn't understand, doesn't remember all of the orders, doesn't remember all of the abilities, because that's actually a large part of the skill in this game, is just remembering to use all the things that you have at your disposal. Some of the some of the highest meta performing lists, they're wildly complicated. They have a lot of orders. They have a lot of special tricks they can do. They've got really complicated cards. Some are really good and some are really bad. And the player needs to know to discard the bad ones and look for the good ones, to keep the good ones for the right time and not just use them at the first opportunity, or maybe just use every card at every opportunity. These are all intricacies of knowing your faction, knowing your commander, and then knowing the exact specifics of your list, which are lost on the person who didn't really design this list. They didn't build it. They haven't learned it and crafted it and improved it. And they are entirely unquantifiable. That will never be measured. That, except in a generic sense, that we can approximate some of that to their level of their rating, their skill. But that's only when they're playing that list. Only when they're playing that faction, we can sort of see how skillful they are. But when you give those lists to people who don't know them, these can actually be very subpar lists. Not even like, oh, that person won't get the most out of them. No, that person would have been much better suited playing something less complex with less moving parts, because they will be much more straightforward to use well. Having an ability is worthless unless you remember to use it. So having too many abilities can be overwhelming. It's like I'm describing a bad player here, a beginner player. I play the game all the time. I speak about it every single week. I look at units continuously. When I play a new list for the first time, I'm forgetting things left, right, and center. I've been playing John for the past 2-3 months. I still forget to rally cry most times that I attack. It's something that I have to continuously remember, remind myself to do. And that's just because he is a good commander, but he is pretty complex. There are some complex and interesting and exciting tricks that you can do with it. But if you're not going to use those tricks, you'd be better off using something somebody a lot more straightforward.
Brett, are you busy?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
No, I'm good.
What's your thoughts?
No, I actually totally agree with it. It's something I won't even try to debate or put a spin on. That's just the fact of how it works. That's in every war game. You know, you can't just copy paste someone's list and have it work. Like, the number of times I have a lot of people in my inbox asking for list advice. How do you deal with this? How would you optimize this? How would you play this? And I gave someone what I thought was a pretty good Night's Watch list, and they got like curb stomped. So then you have to like go into it and you have to say, okay, well, how did you do this? What did you do with this? Did you do this? There's so many intricacies, like Carlo said, that aren't immediately obvious. And some of them are as simple as, you know, the activation order. If the plan is to get Sworn Brothers with Watch Captain engaged and get the most out of them, but you're using Relentless at the start of the round for a maneuver to delay something else, then you're taking away your ability to double tap that round by charging and then using the Relentless. You know, things like that. So even something as simple as, you know, Watcher on the Wall, who's the unit that's most important to get the plus one movement. If they see it as just the shift, you know, maybe they're putting that card on Ranger Trackers, and having movement 7 Ranger Trackers is nice, but as an experienced Night's Watch player, I can say, and I think, Carlo, you'd probably agree, the biggest strength to Watcher on the Wall is the reroll on charge distance. And so if you're not optimizing every little piece, just like he said, in that list, and that's from you not being experienced with that list and understanding it, then no, you can't just copy a list and go win a tournament. The exception to that was, you know, last version's Othel. That was as close to a this list plays itself as I think you'll ever see in this game. And while Mance is incredibly powerful, and I do think that even average skills can win with him because the deck works that well, can a beginner pick up, you know, Mickey's Mance list and go win a tournament against good to very good players? Probably not.
No, I think that's a really interesting point. I think it's the hot topic right now in general in terms of like the meta is whether or not Mance is currently as much of a problem as the well-accepted problem that was the awful crossbow, Night's Watch, gunline kind of list. Now, I do think that the awful list was incredibly forgiving. Being able to basically making ranged attacks and many, many ranged attacks in a turn allow you to be quite sloppy with your positioning effectively. That 2-inch shift that you do before every shot can allow you to like make up for slightly bad positional play. Whereas I do think that the Mance lists with lots of units on the board, all of which want to try and stay within short range of Mance to gain advantage of his rally cry, plus some relatively complicated cards in the way that they can be utilized to their best of abilities, such as coordination tactics and regroup and reform and some things like that. They're not straightforward to use. They're not as simple as the awful strategies used to be. But unfortunately, I think that we've come to a point with the addition of the more recent stuff, the addition of Varamir being maybe the real tipping point that pushed us over the edge, but also the chariots are very, very strong, adding to what was already quite a powerful faction. I think that when played by somebody who has practiced it, does know the list, does know all its moving parts, that list is just as oppressive, just as powerful as Offal was when Offal was being played by the best players and winning tournaments. And at least the submissions, the stats, the results that we've been looking at in the past month say that Mance is as dominant of the game right now as Offal ever was in his prime. Now, you can argue, you could say that Offal players were possibly more ostracized. there was a lot of hate towards Offal at the time. I feel there was a lot of people kind of talked out of playing him. A lot of self-regulation, which is I think a thing that players. It's a very difficult topic for whether or not a player should be self-regulating or whether or not the balance of the game should be regulating them, whether or not the rules of the game should be keeping them in check. But when we get to a point where something is that wildly dominant, we have to kind of accept that it's kind of the community's response that will make or break whether or not these enjoyable tournaments, enjoyable participation for everybody involved. And it's a big question about whether or not Mance is stronger than Offal ever was. And the results say, yes, he is, based off of the LGT results. He was the top four, you know, basically the semifinals of all four entrants into the like the last two games. Both were playing double Mance in the Invitational, which is a large overlap with all the people who came in the top 10. Not exactly, but you know, the majority of them were players also playing in the Invitational. That was also all four players in the semifinal were playing Free Folk. Free Folk finished top four positions there. In the top 10 at the LGT, 8 of those positions went to Free Folk, all of which were double Mance. So it's saying that this isn't just individuals playing him as best as anybody can. Yes, a couple of those players are definitely the people who have been championing Free Folk and Mance for a long, long time. They aren't meta chasing. They've been Free Folk players for as long as Free Folk have existed. These are the people who crafted these lists, but the other six in the top 10, there's definitely 2, 3, 4 of them who will put their hand up readily and say, no, yeah, I only started playing Mance recently and I play him because he's the best thing in the game. And they've been able to pick him up in relatively quick time, craft lists, become experienced with them, and then pilot them to being, you know, top 4 finishers, top 8 finishers at the biggest tournament that the game's ever run.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you said it. Actually, I think when you look at it, if you cut it down to brass tacks, I think the argument would be that, you know,
don't want to use this term, but I'm going to use it anyway. Like a trained monkey could have played Oppo, right? You shoot, you shoot, you shoot. When you and I played our game where I challenged you and I said, I think I have something that can beat it, you know, when things kind of went south for you and it was like, well, now some of the finessing is over with. Now all I have left to do is just blast and hope that I come out on top. And of course you came out on top. And, but I think that was the problem with Oppo. You could just go blast and get your way through it. But with that said, man has way more things going for him than the Opalist did. Opalist was very straightforward. I'm going to fucking shoot you. And then when I'm done shooting you, I'm going to shoot you again. And if you charge me, I'm going to shoot you. Mance has so much control, and he's so much more well-rounded. He's got massive number of wounds on the table. So things like Tywin NCU with a Flayed Men bomb, was it 100%? No, but could it take out, you know, a 10-point unit of crossbows and screw them on activation count? Yes, absolutely, it could. Mathematically, kind of easily, I guess. But, oh, so what are you going to do? You Tywin bomb Tormund Raiders, and then there's still, you know, 60 wounds on the board. Like, you didn't really do much. Taking 12 wounds away from a 48-wound list is huge. Taking 12 wounds away from a 72-wound list, it doesn't really matter that much. It's not doing enough. Othel didn't have ways to stop your cards. Othel didn't have ways to punish you for taking zones. You did have Jaor to tutor cards, so that's something that the two lists do have in common, which I hope is something they look at going forward. Like, hey, this card tutoring is crazy. Maybe we need to, you know, limit it to its commander cards only or its basic deck only. Like, the freedom to draw any of these cards is crazy. And it tends to show itself. And here we're seeing it again with Targ Heroes 3, but that's another subject. We'll see where that one goes. But I do agree. I think Mance is just as bad as Othel. It's just a little bit different. Othel punished you for showing up and playing because he just killed your stuff. Mance punishes you for playing like you just do stuff that you have to do to win the game, and you get punished for it. I'm talking about hidden traps, you know, and things like that. So, you know, there's a lot more things that Mance has that Othel doesn't, and I'm glad you said it, because when I said it on Discord, I got, like, bombarded, but, of course, I'm, like, the where Mickey is the Free Folk champion for enjoying Free Folk, I'm the champion for the Free Folk hatred, so it's something I embrace, but, no, I'm just...
We all have our roles in the community, Brett.
I do think it is just as bad. It's just a different level of bad. It's not like, hey, I showed up and got stomped by a noob bad, but it's like, hey, there's literally not one single thing I could have done in this game differently, done better, anything. This list just flat out cannot beat this list if it's played remotely well. That's the level that means.
Yeah, that's...
You just
that's,
need to roll better.
that's always the truth, you know. believe in the heart of the cards and roll better. I do think it's been something that's been on my mind quite a lot recently, because I'm gearing up towards playing in the French National Championship, and I'm very aware of what things that I think I'll have to beat, what things that I'm trying to prepare for, what things I'm trying to build lists for now. Bringing the whole conversation full circle back to what we started with is I'm trying to, you know, look at the meta as a whole and think what I can do outside of the box, think outside that box, what can beat it, because what's kind of like tried and tested as the second best is well known as the second best. Like it's definitely falling down to Mance a lot of the time repeatedly. He is standing out as a single winner a lot of the time. So what I think my own personal opinion of that right now is that the saving grace, the thing that we have going for us, is that the Mance list is very complicated to run. And it also is a bit restricted in terms of, like, it does want to stay within the Mance bubble. It does want to use the same cards over and over again for the same reasons. And if you can learn to predict what it wants to do, then the best option may well be to run a wildly different list style and just know that you're at a disadvantage. You've got a chance that if your opponent plays right, if your opponent plays well, you will lose. But if I can come to the table and force a mistake by using units and strategies that they haven't seen a lot recently do things differently to the way that they normally see, then we can hope that a mistake will come from that. And particularly, as I spoke about a little bit on Tony Ground, in a tournament setting, particularly when we're talking about the later stages of tournaments, the knockout rounds, once we get to day two, when we get to day three, and people are tired and distracted, we may well see that those really complicated lists are getting harder and harder and harder to pilot. And if you can come with a list that just goes right into your opponent's face and tries to hope that they make a mistake, that really could be the best strategy, as long as you've built the list with that in mind. I think that that's a lot how I feel about the way the quarterfinal match that I had against Luke in US Nationals. I still state to this day that I had the better list and I should have won that game, but he came aggressively into my face and I made mistakes. And then he took advantage of those mistakes, played very, very well off the back of it, and he won the game, which was my game to lose, and I lost it. Now, I think that you have to think that way about Mance right now, because he is the favorite in every single game. I don't think that there is a list out there that can tailor itself to have the advantage against a well-tailored Mance list. And so what we need to look for is ways that we can force mistakes out of that Mance list, force it to do things that it doesn't want to do, and get lucky. And that's what I'm hoping for. But I do find it a very difficult challenge. And also, it's a challenge not to be completely sucked into and entirely consumed by this Mance list as the only thing that you think about. Because if you become entirely obsessed with it, then you'll end up with a list that just isn't very good into everything else that exists. There are plenty of other strong things. They may not beat Mance, but they're still very powerful in their own right.
I think it, it says something when you can have Mance die round one and still get a crushing victory against because that's what was it? I think round one. That's what happened at the day before Nationals. The last chance qualifier, is that what they called mm-hmm. it? So it's a little funny how strong he is when you can have him die round one before his attachment does anything and still come away, with a victory, especially crushing.
There's a lot of powerful things in the game right now. So I think that the number one thing will always draw a lot of hate, and how we deal with that as a community is a really difficult, complicated question. And the best solution, the best place that the community can be in my mind, is exactly what you were discussing last week, and is this concept that the best players out there should hopefully want to beat it, not be the one using it. So that's all you can hope for, is that when you turn up at a tournament, if you are considering yourself as one of these best people, then take on the challenge, play something else, come up with an idea of what can beat it, test it out, show the world. And honestly, people will be amazed. They will give you, if you turn up to a medium-sized tournament right now, I do think that, most of the well-informed community will necessarily roll their eyes, but they're not going to stand up on a box and applaud you if you turn up with the double Mance and you win. But if you turn up to an event of good size with good players, and particularly if other people are running Mance and you then go ahead and beat them, then as long as what Craig was talking about earlier, as long as people don't naysay the quality of the tournament and say, well, then everybody must have been bad, the community really will say that's a really well-earned win and will hopefully give the respect that person deserves. And surely that's what we're all here for, respect of our peers and an achievement we can all be proud of.
Yeah, I think, finding something that really fits your own play style, something that really you can call your own. Obviously, it's hard to ever, claim to be, the original creator of any particular list. You may be able to claim that you made it popular, but, mm-hmm. I mean, you never know. Someone else could have created the list, but with that aside, it's always, there's always that added, benefit of, winning with something that you can call your own that isn't something that is considered, one of the best lists and or commanders out there. Even though, I still kind of regret not running my Greyjoys, at the Nationals, because I ran the Mance at the last chance, mm-hmm. and the original plan was then to run my Greyjoys the next day, but, going 4-0 with four crushing victories, I was like, how can I say no to that, but like I said, I still kind of regret not running my Greyjoys, because I've always done so well with them in the past. Unfortunately, all the tournaments that I've done super well with them, none of them want to, submit their results on stats, so it never shows up. especially all the Adepticons, taking third at Adepticon with, what is considered, bad, by stats standards. It would have been nice to kind of get the results up on there and kind of show people, hey, look, these things can do good. Cause my list was just it was Victarion Commander with a bunch of Reavers,
not to come back to the value of stats and stuff like that, but that is one of the things that more recently I very much tried to promote on the site side of things and kind of bring to the fore, which is this idea that hopefully it can give players the recognition that they deserve. It's about finding the people who are running things that we're not expecting and doing well with, and then celebrating and championing that, both in terms of their ranking, giving them lots of points for having achieved such an achievement with a low rated thing, but also just having it be visible, having every tournament have the same transparency to everybody. So when people choose not to participate, I'm always saddened by the fact that it's your event that won't get the exposure that it could have had. It won't get talked about by people who do care about the site. It won't get talked about by people who believe that it is the be all and end all of what is the competitive side of the game. I do think that participation in the community is the best way forward for people to gain all sorts of kind of benefits from that. So, that'll be the last time I tell people to go and submit their results. I promise.
Are you there, Dave? I guess it sounds like it's time to move on to the next topic, but I don't actually know what the next topic is. So,
sorry, I was muted and I was sitting here talking like a goofy person. but I was just mentioning how, in the last episode, I wish more people would out this way, in the U.S., but mostly the Midwest would use stats because I like it. I like, using it, but, no one out here wants to, make an account and, put in the little bit of effort, because I think they think about it and they think of this think of it as this big hassle, but That's just from inexperience of not using the site and realizing how quick it can be to just submit and, you know, be done. I mean, like me and you played when we played our kind of pickup game at Family Time Games, you want to do it on stats? Yeah, sure. And it took us like, you know, and I barely use it because no one uses out of here. And I even am like, okay, this, that, and it's done, you know?
Yeah. I think it's quite a natural segue into what was going to be possibly topic two, and is the bit where I get my permanent ban from Small Council Radio, which is this idea about what differences there are between the EU and the US. And I do think that unfortunately stats hasn't been as widely adopted and accepted in the US as it has in the EU. There is a definite, like, strong bias towards the EU in terms of submissions. You know, earlier you asked about how many of them are TTS versus how many of them are in person. I don't know, but my gut feel is, you know, two to one or so in favor of one person. But I would say it's way more overwhelmingly in favor of the number of submissions coming from the EU versus the number of submissions coming from NA. Now, it could be that the EU just actually has a way more or significantly bigger player base, and that is actually representative of how many people play in Europe versus how many people play in the US. But I actually think it's more of a difference that the EU community is far more connected and is far more active in the way that various groups interact with each other. The amount of times we travel from country to country playing in each other's tournaments is significantly higher. I mean, the differences, of course, are geographical. Like, they're huge. I can travel from where I live in England on the west of Europe right over to the far east of Europe anytime in a 3-hour or less flight. So I consider everywhere in Europe a short journey for me. If I wanted to attend their national tournament, their national events, I'll be going to France in 2.5 weeks. The Polish nationals is in 1.5 weeks, and the UK nationals was just 10 days ago. These three events are all shaping up to be basically UK nationals was 116 people on the day. Polish nationals, I believe, is capped at 80 people, but had over 100 applications and it has like about 20 people on the waiting list. And French nationals looks like it will also be 100 people. This is three tournaments in the span of 1 month, which have basically 100 people in them. And as far as I'm aware, you know, there's never been an event in the U.S. which has been bigger than 40 people to date. LVO in January next year looks to be really, really popular. It looks like it's going to be a 48-player event and the new biggest U.S. tournament. But I think that all of that leads to the EU meta being way more integrated and way more developed. Now, and I want to be really specific. I don't believe that the players are better, but I do believe that the lists that those people are fielding are significantly stronger. And I think that comes from a very integrated breeding ground of different players with different styles all coming together on a much more regular basis and learning from each other and learning to understand each other's intricacies, play styles, and kind of thoughts about the game. And I think that has developed the EU meta at a faster rate than the US.
I think, you know, you're mentioning, you know, that, like, there's just much more people, you know, in Europe that are playing. And I think that's definitely true. I think it started off with the fact that, over to your other point of being able to travel much easier, I think being able to travel much easier is what kind of jump started. And then now that you have these solid groups that are just continuing to grow, whereas I feel like out this way, You know, we have some pretty solid groups, but they're all like, you know, you have like the Indy group, and you have the Ohio group, you have my group, which is my group in particular is like divided in like three different groups between Wisconsin and Illinois, and then you got to like people all the way out on the West Coast. So, you know, I feel like the significant groups for this game in the U.S. are just so scattered that it's hard to bring those big groups together like with each other. That, and I don't know how it is out by you, but I've you know, coming from a card game background, when I was playing the card game I was playing, you know, finding people to travel with me was like super easy. Like I had a 7-seater van and I'd have to tell people, no, I'm sorry, I'm out of room to, you know, carpool to an event somewhere in the U.S. Whereas with tabletop gaming, you know, I'm lucky if I can find one other person, if not two, to come, you know, to drive out to Indy or Ohio or wherever it may be. You know, I feel like at least out in the U.S., tabletop gamers are just a lot less likely to commit to the travel.
Well, I think from a U.K., this isn't a Europe thing. From a UK perspective, we have a high propensity of tabletop players over card game players, over, you know, CCG, TCG, Magic, all that, and its variants, as alongside your RPG players, your board game players, that whole ecosystem of people who are playing similar kind of games. They're all kind of different games that are vying for a lot of the same kind of person's attention. I know that I'm, you know, I have a lot of interest in card games too and board games. And I think that there's a lot of crossover between the people who will commit to any one of those at any given time. In the UK, we do have a high percentage of those people choosing to play tabletop games. And personally, I put that down to the fact that, you know, we are the home of Games Workshop. There is a Games Workshop store in every single small town here. It's not exact. It's definitely not true, but there's practically as many Games Workshops as there are McDonald's, right? You can't go to a town without walking past a Games Workshop and being like, oh, I believe they call themselves Warhammer now. There's a Warhammer store. And then you feel compelled to go and look at the minis in the window and all that kind of stuff. And they are so widely attended by the youth in the UK. Now, we're still talking about people who are attracted towards tabletop gaming and stuff like that. But players that otherwise might have gone to play Magic, might have gone to play various board games, might just stay at home and play computer games. These people, they get into tabletop gaming and at a young age, and it becomes a large part of their life from much earlier. And that's not unique to the UK, but I think that it does lead to us having a much higher tabletop presence. But that's not the same for Europe as a whole. I think that that's a specific case for the UK. And a lot of people who play Song, you know, they used to play 40K. They used to play Warhammer Fantasy. They're exiles from the Games Workshop machine that just always moves forward, always changes. And I think that has done our game and our national community and identity very well. You know, I'm very pleased that we managed to get as many people to UK Nationals as we did. But we also lent, as I said, very heavily on people traveling internationally from other European countries. Not quite, but about a quarter to a third of all of our entries actually came from outside of the UK. And I'm jealous of Poland, where at Polish Nationals, they have over 100 entrants into their national event, and not a single one of them is international. They have such a strong community. They have tournaments there are multiple tournaments being run in Poland every single weekend. It is crazy how much those guys are playing the game. And I think that can be attributed a little bit the success that War Factory are having with their deal to distribute Polish boxes, Polish version of the game. So I think that there's a lot that we can do to improve our communities, but I think that geography is such a barrier in the US to getting that sense of integrated kind of rivalries and integrated play groups effectively, which will breed new growth in the game.
Yeah, and anyone listening.
Sorry, I've just got to interrupt for a second because I have to say something. It's actually kind of funny because he's talking about Poland, but I actually got a PM yesterday from Sławek, and he asked me to join the Poland team. So I'm gonna be Team Piwineka, however you say it. I guess I'm gonna get a jersey for LVO. So it's kind of funny, isn't it?
I got a call,
well,
so
I'm sure that's
take it away for
honest.
A minute.
Go ahead, Carlo, what'd you say?
That sounds like an absolute honor, something that I've never been offered myself. So consider yourself in an exclusive club of possibly one so far as international entrance into Team Poland.
It was interesting. I thought it was worth mentioning. A bunch of really, really nice guys. Obviously, I've been close with Bloodraven for a while. Probably really since the first three sales league. And, so I thought it was really interesting and cool. What did Dave say he was going to do? I guess I can touch on what you said about the geography and all of those things where you're talking about the US versus the Euro. So this is going to hurt me a little bit to say, but as far as some of this, I think there's a mostly made up conflict of it's US versus Euro, who's better. It's always like we're two dogs barking at each other kind of thing. I don't really think that exists, but I think unfortunately, overall, a lot of the play styles that dominate the game, a lot of the list formats that end up being predominant are pretty well, maybe not invented per se by Euro players, but they're definitely made dominant mostly by them. I think the U.S. skew, pretty common in the U.S., you probably got a little bit of that there at Gen Con, right? Didn't you run across a couple of lists where it was like, this list isn't going to win the event, but it damn sure can knock me out? Did you get that sense at Gen Con? Yeah. So, as far as I think, if anything, this episode has really kind of pumped me up to really build on the U.S. communities. It used to be something that I did a lot. And I think the U.S. has Sunday Slaughter, who's a really nice Unity piece, a really nice thing, you know, a U.S.-based podcast that people really enjoy. I think to some extent we miss the Mythicos guys, right? Because before TTS streams were a thing, you had Mythicos, and they had that really high-quality stream. They were competing with, you know, Blitz Minis. This is old school A Song of Ice and Fire, right? Those were the guys. Like, it was Ben with Blitz Minis and Ray, and then it was keeping us entertained, like, opening up some of these metas. And I think the U.S. needs something like that. Now, obviously, everybody loves Chris Tran. It's really hard not to love him, but it's something that I could do a little bit better with as well myself, and I think some of the other guys in here could do a little bit better to help grow the game, to make the game exciting for the U.S. people, because I do feel like attendance is down. There's a Dragonfall GT that's happening right now, and it's billed as an Adepticon primer. I unfortunately wasn't able to go because of the house schedule with Susie and the kids, but I think they struggled to get to 8, and it's just you know, there's a lot of growth that we need to do, and I do think that we should focus on pumping some of those numbers up and getting the game more exciting in the U.S.
Yeah, I think on the point that you made about whether or not the EU meta is kind of like perfecting a style or kind of, you know, like inventing a particular style, and that it's mostly what kind of like has won in historically speaking when the EU and the US play together on TTS. That is the big past friction about, you know, EU versus US as being better. Personally, I may be offending people, but I think that has quieted down a lot because it's been just accepted that the EU like is ahead. Like, it's not really it's not a clash of styles anymore. It is that one is leading the way and the other is mostly following suit sometime after. And that, again, is not because the players are better, but because the players are playing in a competitive environment on a far more regular basis. So the speed at which they're able to perfect lists, the speed at which they're able to change to kind of like new ideas and copy and propagate ideas that they learn from other people, make improvements. You were discussing earlier about, you know, people coming to you for list advice. I never go to people for list advice. I always build lists for myself, but that doesn't mean that I don't learn from other people's lists, but it's always, I have my own idea and then I start to play with it. I maybe win, I maybe lose. But what I learn is maybe there's something I could do better there. The lists that I'm currently running with John, I was running conscripts and like some different NCUs. And then I realized that I could run Stormcrow Mercenaries. And I did it because I played against somebody else's list and they ran Stormcrow Mercenaries with a Watch Captain. And I thought, oh, that's actually really a good value at 7 points in this Night's Watch. And that's just what I'm looking for. I just need one more point. And if I just move this Watch Captain into a different unit and move some things around, like, hey, I'm not copying your list, but I'm using an idea from it and I've learned from it. And that's come from playing against another very good opponent who's doing their own list ideas, their own designs. And I think that creates a breeding ground where we can perfect our own style, perfect our meta on a whole. And when it comes then to like meeting like in bigger international tournaments, I know Adopticon is just coming to an end, and that will be definitely won by an EU entrant, right? If I'm not mistaken, Brett. So I don't envy you the difficulty of having to post that giant Warhammer across the Europe. But I think that what we see is that the US players are just being a step behind in experience of the wider community, and that's because they are more disparate, more locally based, and not able to compete on such a regular basis in big events, in big melting pots where all these ideas come together.
Now, with that said, what were your thoughts when you first kind of came to Gen Con and were facing against some of these lists that were possibly, you know, a bit of a different style for the last chance qualifier, you know, all 3 days essentially?
Yeah, no, I mean, like, so, like I say, this isn't a question of like one being better or worse than the other. There were things in the US which I'd never thought about, I'd never considered. There were some styles and lower activation counts that I hadn't prepared for, and I wasn't ready for, particularly on day one of the main event. I came up against these Baratheon lists with Champions of the Stag in them, I believe they were both playing Rightful Heir. They were using Tactical Approach, and suddenly they were just chewing through my units, and this was something that I hadn't faced in the UK and was not ready for. That needed me to practice, learn and adapt to. And luckily, I spent the entire Saturday night going into the Sunday, knowing that I was going to face one of these lists, first game on the Sunday. And I had time to process the matches that I'd played the day before, had time to think about the matchup and what I did have. Now, I obviously couldn't change my lists. I couldn't adapt in list building process, but I could adapt in the way I played the game and what my outlook to play into it was. And I was able to play significantly better against that list on the next day and take the win. Then I get thrown in against the Stark list, which I have not seen a Stark list in that style recently. I mean, there are a lot of things I hadn't seen recently going into Gen Con because, you know, I wasn't actually playing on a very regular basis in the lead up to it. So a lot of things were, you know, surprises to me in that kind of way. But there was definitely, you know, a propensity for lists to be quite different to the European ones. Now, I was way more comfortable and confident playing into the more European style, which is generally speaking a higher activation count, more about charge blocking, less about damage done on the table, and more about scoring victory points to win the game. As overarching, generally speaking, concepts, like, you know, the specifics of them can vary person to person, list to list. But yeah, that was a learning experience for me in terms of I took a lot of that experience away and I'm now much more prepared for those lists. And that is the kind of thing that I'm talking about when I say that I think that the European players have a lot more opportunity, generally speaking, to meet those differing styles. They do exist in different countries. And if you get out there and find them, you can find them all in Europe. In the same way that if you got out there and traveled a lot in the US, I'm sure you could find all the different styles that you find in Europe too. But it seems so much more difficult for a person to get out there, meet the various communities. They have to travel so much further, and the events just aren't drawing all these people into one single location, which makes it much more difficult for people to experience a wide variety of those play styles. So, I found the US meta to be, you know, some surprises to me. They were surprises, which I just needed to learn and adapt to, I felt, not things that I could never beat. Whereas there are some things which have been produced in the game that I think, you know, some things have been perfected and molded and crafted over the last 6 months that are like, well, no matter how well I play into this, I don't think I can win. Whereas I didn't feel that way about any list at Gen Con. I looked at the whole set of lists and factions that people were playing and armies that they were putting on the board. And I thought, I can win every game if I play well enough. Whereas sometimes when I meet a European opponent, I look at their lists and I say, if you play well, I've lost. There is no other way about this. And that was a much refreshing mindset to come into these games with, always feeling like I had a good chance, and then just to be left on like the quality of your own play. It is an unfortunate reality that the game is actually a lot more enjoyable when it's not taken to its extremes of perfection of lists. The perfection of lists actually, you know, doesn't improve gameplay for the players. It improves gameplay for the person who wins, which is the person who probably perfected their lists the most. And is just an unfortunate reality of what tabletop games are, because one of the largest things that makes a tabletop game and not a board game, in my mind, is that you come to the table with an asymmetric starting position. We both craft our lists outside of the game. We don't draft them in front of each other. We don't counterpick each other as we go. We don't react to each other's kind of building mechanisms as board games would have it happen, where we both begin in equal places and then we work our way through the game. No, no, when we arrive at the table, there is already a big difference a lot of the time in what we've decided to field, and that then carries on right throughout the game.
Craig, have you gotten a chance to chime in?
I haven't. To go back to, I know you're talking about lists now, but I'm going to rewind it. I apologize. To go back to the blending of play styles, like you talked about, the UK gets, or not the UK, the EU gets to blend mm-hmm. play styles, gets a lot more tournament stuff like that. In my experience, so far in the U.S., in the last year, we'll just take the last year, which is when I've done the most traveling for tournaments, it seems like no matter where I go, for example, I go to LVO, I play Kurt, he's from Kansas City, I played two guys from Minneapolis, which are also the Midwest, and I played a guy from Ohio. I didn't play anyone from the West Coast. Like, all right, whatever, I go to Adepticon, play the guys from Minneapolis again. Play guys from Ohio again. Play guys from Indy. Okay? Now I'll go to Indy and play. All right, I'm going to play the same guys from Minneapolis and the same guys from Indiana and the same guys from Ohio. So even going to LVO last year, and I know a lot of people had to cancel because there was that COVID outbreak, so we only had like 50% attendance. Two-thirds of the people there were the same people who were at the Midwest tournaments, so the Midwest players.
Mm-hmm.
Go to a tournament in the Midwest, which is where I'm from, and again, it's all the Midwest players. So Gen Con was the first time I'd even met anyone from playing from Alabama or from, you know, any Detroit, which oddly enough is Midwest. But so even though I'm traveling to these cons, I'm still not getting that experience that you're talking about of mixing play styles. Because it's just the same group of U.S. competitive players traveling from tournament to tournament to tournament. And that's a real shame. I went to Kansas City recently just for fun. It was a great tournament. Small local store. I'm like, okay, I'm going to play some local people that I've never played before. This is great. I played Kurt, who I played at LVO and saw at Nationals and played at Nationals. Then I played Cyrus, who also at all those tournaments. Like, even
yeah.
when I go to other tournaments where there's players I've never played before, I always, for whatever reason, end up playing the same people. And I'm not complaining. They're all great guys. But even when traveling in the U.S., I'm not getting that melding experience that you're talking about. And I
yeah.
really wish I was. Because I don't disagree with you on, you know, the bigger group of people you get to play, then the more you learn. I mean, it kind of goes
yeah.
back to what we were talking about earlier with stats and seeing different list types pop up and then dismissing them, not dismissing them. A lot of that comes with meeting new people too, and then you meet new you learn new ways to play the game, and it's not happening in the States, and it's really unfortunate, at least in my experience.
Yeah, I mean, love it or hate it, that is one of the advantages of TTS, which is you'll definitely, I mean, it's one of the advantages of one-off games on TTS, that's for sure. You can pick the person that you want to play against. You can find a new person that you've never played. The TTS community then becomes its own set of people that you've probably never played before, and you can definitely get on and meet those people and play them. But it has its own problem with that. It has its own... It suffers from exactly the same problem, which is, once you become integrated into the TTS community, once you become part of that and a regular in it, you'll suddenly find, well, you do only find the same people on TTS. It's the same people every time you enter a TTS tournament. You think, oh, I'll play some new people from Canada. I'll play somebody from the US and then whatever. And then you're like, oh, great. I've been paired up against the TTS community on an active player base on any given kind of tournament is probably like 40 of the same people most times, right? Like, and then when a tournament gets really, really big, it's really, really popular, it can bring in another 40 people who don't normally enter events, and you've got yourself a great 80 person event, and that's loads of new people to the scene, loads of new people to meet and play each other. But on a large majority, you know, not exclusively large majority, the ones who play regularly on TTS are going to rise towards the top of the rankings, all meet each other, play each other as they always do. These people play each other incredibly regularly. Some of these people, they play each other 2-3 times every single week. They don't live in the same country. And again, that becomes a point at which they're probably not learning a lot anymore. Now, they are learning something if they're both running new lists, they're testing ideas and discussing ideas once they become familiar with each other. They can still take some learning experience from it. But again, the TTS community becomes a step that you can start to learn new styles, integrate, and learn very, very quickly. I would advise anybody who feels stagnant in their local area that you will learn a huge amount if you get out on TTS, play some people, but that will then stagnate in itself if you don't find new ways to constantly challenge yourself. And unfortunately, not everybody can travel wide and far to go and meet new communities and new players. I'm sure it's very disappointing, Craig, if what you do is travel wide and far and then realize that you're just meeting the same people that you're meeting anyway at these events. So yeah, I don't really know what the solution there is for the US players about how they can cultivate a better traveling tournament circuit, as it were, a better attendance of people at their more local events. It seems like the game just hasn't quite managed to achieve kind of like critical mass in a lot of areas in the US for it to become like really get the ball rolling and kind of be like self-sustaining, that you know you can put on an event and you know that you'll get, you know, 30 people down to this event and you won't have to like really relentlessly promote it and put lots of work into it. And then once you get to this point that you know that you can run a successful event, that would gather momentum and gather steam. Unfortunately, I don't have any advice because the UK just like has managed to get there, I think, on the majority. And I really, really hope that at least pockets of the US can kind of get to that point.
I think a lot of it comes down to just even getting new players. Because like you were saying, Carlos, it hasn't really hit critical mass. And I think, we need to be trying to grow our communities. I've been pretty fortunate in just the last like 4 weeks, we've gotten like 7 new people. We have like a messenger chat where we coordinate games, and it's up to 44 people now. The problem that we're having is finding, a day where everyone is all available, because that would be amazing if we could get, half of them, 22 of them to all show up on the same day, and start really, having these large, consistent events. I think it starts with just, developing your group, the best you can. And sometimes it takes time. You really got to work at it. You got to find that one or two people that are willing to kind of take charge and kind of cultivate that group.
Yeah, I think I think the thing that people underestimate is that it can take a lot of effort and sacrifice from individuals to like really establish a game as the focal point of what a group will play, right? Like, and tabletop games has this terrible issue of particularly the more niche games, which I think Song still has to consider itself. It's not a major brand. It's not a major name that people will know. Even inside of the tabletop community, lots of people will never have seen it or heard of it, I think. So it competes with a lot of games of similar size and even similar play style. Now, I believe it's the best game. Like, I don't think these games are, you know, as good as it. But, like, there is a lot of crossover between people who play Song and then people play Marvel Crisis Protocol, play Star Wars Legion, who play X-Wing, Armada. All these games which have probably a similar player base. And it can take a lot of commitment and sacrifice from a person to try and drag everybody kicking and screaming into Song being the game that gets played in their local area on a regular basis. I'm not saying this as like, oh, I fell on the sword and I made this huge sacrifice. You know, I don't have it in me to drive my own local community forward in that way. And we don't really see any growth in my very small local player base. I mean, it's actually an incredibly small group. You know, I normally play with three other people. There's normally four of us who play Song. The wider community could be counted at six to eight who, like, on a less regular basis to turn up. So what I do, and I'm able to continue to be involved in Song and continue to enjoy it so much because I'm able to travel to other groups. In the UK, I know that I can get in the car and I can drive 2 hours, and that will find me five different cities, which will all have a community which runs, you know, 20 odd person events on, like, you know, maybe a monthly basis or so, at least like one a month, if that's what I wanted to do. And that's a large way that I got out and met the community and kind of like became so involved in the game was I started to attend smaller events. Now, that has allowed me to then run much bigger events through TTS and at the London Grand Tournament. But it's never been something that I've personally ever been successful at growing on, like, a grassroots level. You know, like my local club, I've never really managed to be able to get more people engaged and involved in Song, and it's something that I like. I always am looking for new ideas about what would bring people in, what would how you get converts to this game, keep them around and keep them interested, because I just think it's a wonderful game, and I wish I had a larger player base to play with at all times, because I do think that that's what's going to make me a better player and us all enjoy the game more.
Well, easy way to fix that is everyone enlist your wives, and we'll see how that goes.
No, that can never happen to me. me and my wife, we can only play cooperative tactical games together. There is a lot of disharmony as and when one person beats the other in a competitive game. I keep playing board games with my wife to co-op only games, unfortunately.
It's funny because that's exactly how me and my wife are. She'll play Lannisters every once in a while and she'll whoop my butt and she'll still be mad. Like, I'll get like one good hit in on a unit after I'm down by like four victory points, and it's like the end of the world, and I'm just like, sorry, I'll take it back. but yeah, we usually stick to cooperative games for that reason. But with that said, we're coming down to the wire. We got about 10 minutes left. We can kind of probably have to do a bit of a quicker talk about it. But our last topic is kind of the state of the game as it is. Carlos, since you're the guest, I'm most interested to kind of hear what your thoughts on it is.
It is a topic that's actually on my mind a lot recently, as I was saying, and I think there has been a shift. I think that when season one came around, the game was in a pretty good state. It was a big step forward, a big improvement in terms of the meta, of course, is what I'm talking about when I'm describing the season one change. both reinvigorated a lot of people's interest in the game, brought improvements to it brought some scaling back, some nerfs to some things that were very dominant, being awful. Awful crossbows, Night's Watch, and also MOD, Mother of Dragons, was quite powerful at the time. Those two and Mance were all kind of like in discussions as like basically these three dominate the game at that time. Now, those were scaled back, and that was an improvement. But actually, the biggest change, the biggest positive change in my mind, was the way the relatively underappreciated Starks and underappreciated Baratheons got bumped up. And I do think that there's a really solid middle ground of the game, which is, I think that outside of a couple of outliers, the interactions between most factions, the interactions between most lists, and the disparity in power level between most things in this game is better than it has ever been. I think that the game moving into Season 1 was a really good change for balance perspective. I thought it also, every change reinvigorates interest in the game. I know the only thing that I can directly observe and directly measure is like the number of people coming to the site to build new lists, to submit games, to play in tournaments, and they all get a huge, huge influx and bump in activity whenever there are changes made to the game, whenever there are new releases, whenever there are particularly new hero boxes. That's a big thing for factions. And all of that was reinvigorated by Season 1, which I think was really, really great. Now, over time, I think the introduction of the Chariots and Varamyr have moved us away in the meta to being in a less good spot. We the Mance issue has like slowly arisen over the past 9 months, but that's much better than Othel was, you know, an issue like from day one. Like, you know, and I hope that there is a Season 2 on the horizon myself, and I hope that they make similar size changes. I hope that they give some downturn nerfs to the things that are currently well overachieving, and I also hope that they look at the things that people just aren't really picking and aren't doing well with, and they bring them into the pack. And if we keep continuously doing that, then I think that the game will just continuously improve, and we just have to watch out for new units which come into the game and aren't as heavily tested by the community as these tried and tested factions and units are, and have a negative disruptive effect. Disruptive effect that kind of just mixes the meta up and makes a new thing on top and a new thing powerful is great. You know, the release of the Lannister heroes, Kevin and Adam, have rejuvenated the Lannister faction, but are not a dominant issue. They're not like overbearing on the game. They've just given new life to that faction. So when done right, change is very, very positive. I think that the game still is seeing growth, and that is good. I really hope that it grows in some more significant steps over the next year. If it doesn't, then of course it becomes a question about how long an IP established game will be continue to be supported. It will not last forever, unfortunately. You know, I mean I could be entirely wrong. Maybe G.R.R. Martin will croak it and never want the license back, and Simon will continue to making a Song of Ice and Fire based game forever. But the game really needs to hit that critical mass. I think it has the potential to absolutely blow away all its competitors in the skirmish sized game. And growth in the next year is still continuously going to be the decider of whether or not this game is still going strong and we're still talking about it in 5-10 years time, or whether or not it becomes that game that we used to play and used to care about a lot, but now we've moved on to a new thing because unfortunately the game's just not supported anymore. So I'm very happy with the game as a whole, but I'm always pessimistic in my outlook. I'm always the naysayer. So there are definitely things that that I worry about. And I think growth from every aspect is what we should really be focusing on.
Yeah, I agree. I think, personally, give or take, a little bit or like one or two, I think most factions, I think we'd be in, it's already in like the best spot it's ever been, but I think, three nerfs, we'll just call it, and like three buffs per faction, where they're most appropriately needed. Again, give or take. And I think, it's going to get about as perfect as it's going to get. You're never going to have a perfect system, but, and like you said, when new things come out, it'll, mix things up a bit. But, I think, I have very little to complain about faction to faction, and I think that's a great thing.
I'm excited for the Targaryen Heroes 3, which has just been leaked. There's lots of still things on the horizon that interest me. Of course, I mean, like I've watched a lot of games with Martells, but I'm still really apprehensively waiting to find out like how much of an impact Martells make. I think that can really reinvigorate people to play. Lots of people have always said that that's the faction that they're waiting for. So I think there's loads of really, really good things on the horizon that still keep me very excited for the game. The question is how long can they continuously come up with new things that I'm excited for? So I really want the game to be as big and as good as possible while there's still loads of exciting things to be released.
Yep. Brett, quickly, you got 2 minutes. What are your thoughts summed up? All right, that was a good talk.
Yeah, I mean,
you're funny. I'm joking. Go ahead.
I'm basically with you guys. I think the game overall is in a really good spot. I hope that moving forward, I think Carlo basically touched on the biggest thing. Like moving forward, some of these small, more measured changes are better than just say Mountain's Men aren't very good right now. Let's let them hit on threes and give them sundering. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Mountain's Men will be everywhere. And then, some crazy change like that has really bad effects. So if they continue with these very small, measured changes, like very well thought out, I think the game will only get better. I do agree that there's just a few outliers. I think Martells actually shake the game up quite a bit, which I think is really good for game health. Like, just factually, some of the things that work against other big bads just don't work against Martells. It's just not going to work. And so that's probably a good thing. That's probably a good thing for the game. So I'm really optimistic. I'm really hopeful. And I do think that the game can continue to grow. I think the easiest way to get people into the game, though, is to be able to confidently say, like, hey, this game's in a really good spot. The balance is really good. The developers take care of this game. They care. They make changes that matter. They've gotten much, much better with these changes, and their design is getting more creative and more interactive, and then you can get people to join. I think people get concerned about large-scale changes all of the time. Like, am I going to paint this, and then it's going to be trash,
All right. I got to cut you off there. Just want to do quick shout out. Again, thank you so much, Carlo, for coming on. For everyone listening, I know you probably, 99.9% of you already know about it, but definitely go to asongoficefirestats.com, make an account, start submitting your games. Definitely check out Tourney Ground every Monday. And thank you all for listening in. Again, thank you so much for coming on, Carlo.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure, and it was brilliant meeting you all at Gen Con, and I can't wait till the next time I'll be in the US, or you guys head over to the UK and see what this EU mess is all about. So I'll see you there.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Awesome. Yep, I can't wait.
Yeah, I'll be at LGT 2023. I gotta go. Bye.
still here.